Buns Master.
Buns Master.
Which is now an S&M club.
That's a weird store, actually, Buns Master.
Why?
I don't know. But I went there a little while ago.
It still exists?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But they're in, like, weird places. Like, the one I went to was on the bypass in Langley. So it's on this in this industrial area. You know, like one of those sort of mixed warehouse complexes.
Yeah.
And so there's a bun master in there, buns master. In
buns there. Master, not bun buns, master. They will only have one bun then.
They have buns, but they're masters of buns. And they're
jack of all trades, master of buns.
All they sell there are buns. Like, so that's not really a big draw.
So if you go for a loaf of bread, they will just tell you to fuck off?
Yeah, they're like, okay. The bread affair down the street. And if you go to the bread affair and you're like, I need some hot dog buns, they're like, buns master down that way. Because there's a bread affair in the same area. But it seems weird to me that you'd be like, oh, I need some hot dog buns. Jim at Safeway. I think I'll drive out of here, drive 50 minutes down the road, take an awkward turn into a warehouse complex, buy some buns there, then come back out onto
My mom used to do that. I don't know why. Maybe it was cheap.
Well, there was the Buns Master in Delta was by the gas station, by 7-Eleven.
Used to be by the library.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where Nerdell Place was and whatnot. Yeah, yeah. So that's not so inconvenient to me. You're already...
In the Buns Master district.
You're in the Buns area.
Buns part of town. Are we recording this?
It was the Buns District. Okay. I guess we are.
All right, good. Happy anniversary, everybody. And by everybody, I mean just us, because it's our anniversary. Unless you've been listening to us for a year, in which case, happy anniversary to you as well.
That's right.
This is the Sneaky Dragon Podcast. I'm Ian Boothby.
And I'm David Dedrick.
We just interrupted our chatting about the Buns Master Bakery. Dave and I were...
just to do the show.
Yeah, if you've listened to our show over the past year, you know we reminisce usually about childhood things.
Generally what you reminisce about. I have yet to reminisce about my old age.
Well, you might. You might, like, really remember, remember that time I still had my foot. Now I'm, you know, later you will lose a
diabetic.
Foot. That's right. You'll lose the foot. And then you go like, I remember that foot. Old footy. but don't say that to someone from England, because footy means something different there.
How it used to fit in my shoe. Good old foot.
Now, we've run out of things to be nostalgic about, apparently, because we were both being nostalgic about the Buns Master Bakery in North Delta.
Well, I wasn't being nostalgic about it. I was just mentioning it. Because it seems odd to me that you would... It seems odd to me to go out of your way to buy
buns. That's an odd amount of buns. That's called a baker's dozen.
That's 13 buns.
Which is odd. It is literally odd.
It is. But it just seems odd that you would drive, you know, out... In the sense that life is now supposed to be convenient. We're supposed to do everything like one-stop shop.
Right.
You go into your Safeway.
Right.
You can buy your flowers for your table. Mm-hmm. You can buy your produce for your fridge. You can buy your milk for your fridge. You can buy your meat there. And you can buy buns. They have a bakery.
Your buggy whip. Spats.
That's right. You can get your prescriptions filled.
Right.
You can get your, you know, OxyContin for your addiction while you're shopping for milk and flowers for your table.
And yet this rogue store that's called the Buns Master.
Yeah.
It's not the Bun Master. Dave was calling it the Bun Master earlier. That would mean he would only have one bun. Master, as I said, jack of all trades, master of bun.
He was one of the villains on He-Man.
Buns Master?
Bun Master.
That's right. He teamed up with Manny Faces.
Yeah.
Right. Well, nice thing if you were...
the Jewish villain from He-Man.
Yeah, that's right. Hello, Manny Face. Yeah, you doing? Nice thing about being Manny Faces, because he could rotate
faces. I'm going to get that in.
Is if you ever had a zit, you could just turn your face and have one that was a nice clear face.
Wasn't there... Speaking of nostalgia, wasn't there a villain on The Bionic Man who had that?
Maskatron,
and his face would flip, because I remember having the doll as a child with the flippy face.
That was my favorite toy when I was a kid, Maskatron. Because he did a couple of different things. One, here's why Maskatron was great. You could buy yourself Steve Austin or...
Oscar Goldman.
Okay, or you could buy an Oscar Goldman,
yeah.
Or buy this one that has both faces.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, you're Oscar Goldman, you're Steve Austin, with an eye, not like the $6 million man missing the eye, so he always looks like a little bit like he was in a horrible accident and needs a patch.
Yeah.
Or just generic angry guy face.
But that's because you could look through the back of his head through the eye.
Yes.
And
things would look slightly larger. Not really that great a thing.
It was 1.5%.
Yeah, you know what you could do? You could do that with any doll. If you drilled a hole in the head of your Spider-Man, you could also look through the back of his head as well. But the nice thing about, like, are you going to open up your beverage?
Yeah, there we go.
Okay. Wow, nice. If you can guess what beverage Dave is drinking, we don't care. But here's the weird thing about that doll. Because it was based on a robot in the show that fought Steve Austin.
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, the technology is there to build a full robot. So the fact that you can build bionic limbs, who fucking cares? Like, oh, great, you make an arm? Yeah, I can make a whole robot that's sentient. So shut up. Who cares? It's no big deal. $6 million.
You can also build robots of beautiful women.
Really? Do they have
fembots?
Oh, they have fembots on there too.
That was on $6 Million Man.
Did they start with the fembots and then build the dude, or was it starting with the dude and someone went, you know, we could just build the fembots?
That's right. They're invented in Japan.
Well, here was my problem though with it was so this guy could change faces. Mm-hmm. So you had like he could be Steve Austin or he could be Oscar Goldman.
Yeah.
Do those guys have the same build at all? Like Steve Austin, muscular astronaut, works out, robot arms and legs, incredibly great shape. Oscar Goldman, just regular fella.
Bureaucrat,
desk guy. You just put a new face on him and you go like, oh, clearly you're this fellow.
But if you got the Oscar Goldman doll, it had a really cool briefcase.
That's right.
That came with it.
Yeah, so. And it would open up and you would see his paperwork. Or if you pushed, I think, a separate button, it would open up and it would show you different paperwork.
I think it was like a computer thing, wasn't it?
No, I think it was just cooking the books. I think the thing was he had his forms. He would show the IRS and then he would have the real forms.
Okay. Double entry.
That's right.
Double entry.
Or it was guns. I don't know. So Buns Master is a buns only
story. That was a spinoff of $6 Million Man with Oscar Goldman in Double Entry.
I'm going to say Oscar Goldman, Buns Master.
Double entry.
So, because he was a crusty old sort. And then the bus, it all works for the buns. By the way, you can tell it's our one-year anniversary show because we're doing special bun talk. We're starting off just talking about crescent rolls and hot dog buns.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, what we're saying is this ain't going to last another year. No, we've really completely dried up.
Well, what's funny was when we started the show, when we started a year ago.
Right.
Today.
Were we ever so young?
We started a year ago today.
We weren't even talking about buns.
Actually, not today because you were sick. This week you were sick.
Yeah, that's true.
And we're recording 2 days later. So actually, this is our anniversary plus 2 days.
Right. Okay.
So that kind of, did I ruin it by telling that?
No, not at all.
Kind of wrecked it.
Unless it was a surprise party for me, in which case, yes, you did.
Ooh, I brought some balloons. When we started a year ago, I really thought, I was thinking like 5 years of this.
Okay.
Now I'm thinking, we're lucky we made a year. That's my now.
Ironically, that was also Dave's wedding vows.
That's right. Dear, if we make a year out of this, it will be a miracle.
I give it a year. Mazel tov. And then you went, wait a minute, I'm not Jewish. And I went, well, we got the rabbi anyway. And you smashed the glass and things progressed.
That was my wedding vows, yep.
Okay. Back to the buns.
So
you're saying it's ridiculous that there still exists a person that just sells buns. By the way, this person does not sell bread. You cannot go in there and buy a loaf of bread, apparently.
No, you can just go in there and get buns.
Right. So if you go there and you ask for a muffin, he will tell you to get the fuck out.
So you have to go to see the Muffin Man.
Okay, I don't know the Muffin Man.
Don't you know the Muffin Man?
No.
No, it's just bad.
Because my wife is gluten intolerant, so we just have not.
She hates gluten that much.
Yep. She's not physically, she has no problem. She's just really racist against it.
That's right.
Yeah. She thinks wheat is a race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's very white bread.
Ah.
So she's very against white bread.
There you go.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if you go, well, I think you just.
Have we beat this loaf to death?
I think we've beaten it to pieces. There's no other reason to talk about this loaf.
Okay. All right. Okay. There's only so far we can take people, all right? Like we're pushing our luck. Some people are just tuning in because it's the 1 year anniversary. That's going, right. How are those guys? Are they doing all right? Okay. And the answer is Ian. Ian is doing better.
Yes. 2 days ago.
Yeah. Then it was 2 days ago when I had no voice.
That would have been quite a show, actually.
Yeah.
Just me looking at you and then you nodding.
It would have been a lot like the Edgar Bergen show. You could have just supplied a voice for me. People would assume your lips weren't moving.
That's right. I say, how's it going today, Ian? Well, Dave.
That's right.
It's going pretty good.
Now, Mortimer Snurd and Goofy.
Pretty
who
close
came
together.
First? Yeah.
Pretty close together. And I don't know. I would say Mortimer Snurd.
First?
I would think so.
Well, Dippy Dog was the 30s, but I don't know when he started
but
getting
Dippy
that voice.
Dippy Dog, yeah, that's the thing. You don't.
Dippy Dog, by the way, became Goofy over time.
Mm-hmm. they realized that Dippy Dog was a horrible name. Plus, there was Pluto.
No. Dippy Dog just started huffing glue. Like, when you saw him with that chow basket, that was actually glue. And then he just
sniffed. Why would a dog be wearing a chow basket? That's for horses.
Well, he's sniffing himself. Well, I know. You know why? Because he was addicted to drugs is why.
Is that what it's called, a chow basket? Or did you just make that up?
You're the fucking horse guy. Why are you asking me?
I don't know. Anyway, feed bag. That's what I would.
Feed bag. There you go. And he was huffing glue, and that made him Goofy. And then he had to change his name to Goofy.
I just thought you had some
sort of inside
knowledge.
Then he sobered up, and he had a kid, and then joined the Goof Troop, and he's got his shit together.
Okay.
Over time. He's a success story. They had intervention. All the Disney characters sat around him. Captain Hook sat next to him and just went, hey, you know what? Your incompetence led me to lose my hand.
Well, Bergen. See, I can't do... It's hard to do a Charlie McCarthy. That's harder to do. Yeah, Mortimer Snerd, easy.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie McCarthy, hard.
Candace Bergen. Can you do
Candace
that?
Candace Bergen. Very difficult to do Candace Bergen.
That'd be fantastic to find out she was made of wood as well. And over time, they just had to carve more little lines into her face. And it's his greatest trick.
I believe that joke was made about her because she was renowned as a very wooden actress.
Oh, very good. Okay.
In her career.
That's kind of a 70s joke, I suppose.
Yeah.
All right. And again, mentioning...
Rex Reed made that joke.
Oh, he's very good.
Is he?
No.
He's very old.
He is very old. He's so old that he does not see movies and yet reviews them.
Do you think that's it?
Well, did you see the Cabin in the Woods review?
Well, I thought the Cabin in the Woods review, I just think people misunderstood.
Let's clarify what the Cabin in the Woods review was. Rex Reed reviewed Cabin in the Woods and listed the things he did not like in the movie.
Yeah.
Those things that he listed did not occur in the movie.
Yeah.
At all. Things like people on the moon and vampires on the moon.
Was there such a mention?
There was a mention of something similar to that, yes.
Because the thing I took out of it that I thought maybe people misunderstood was that he was referring to the audience paying to see people get killed. The theater audience.
Uh-huh.
And I think he thought that I think he thought the irony, the ironical distancing of us from what we were doing was a bit dishonest. Do you know what I mean? Like, so we're above Friday the 13th. But we'll pay to go see Cabin in the Woods and laugh at people for going to see Friday the 13th, laugh at those films. And yet we are enjoying that. Ironically, we're getting the same thrills of gory murder and death, but in an ironic way.
Oh, I really want to go to the transcript now. I wish.
That's kind of what I took.
I know we never pause. I wish we could pause the show just so I could go through it and just show it to you. Because there's like at least five things that he mentions
that do not exist at all in the movie. I know.
And he said he hated.
I know. Yeah. I know. I did read it. But
so you think he was being symbolic on those things?
I don't think he was being, maybe, but what the one point that I thought people misunderstood that he made, because people were talking about that and saying, well, no one pays to see anyone get killed in the movie or what, you know, well, I just thought he was talking about the audience, not about.
Well, there was things like he was saying, oh, geez, I don't want to spoil any of the movie. But there was one thing where he went just like, so this is happening and no one notices this happened. There was something that he said that like everyone's too stupid to notice this one thing is happening. And of course they do. And it's a predominant part of the movie that moves things forward, that someone notices that thing.
Yeah.
And then the movie goes forward from there. So to go like, you know, here's a big flaw that this doesn't happen. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't talk. Yeah, the mouse sings a fucking song. Did you not see that? Like, how many bathroom breaks did you goddamn take?
I'm not trying to defend, but I'm just saying
that. Nor can you.
I think that was one good point that he made about it. Just that.
Okay.
I mean, if you're going to watch Cabin in the Woods, then you also have to enjoy Friday the 13th.
Really? Why do you have to do that?
Oh, I shouldn't say enjoy, but you just can't criticize it on that level. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, it's a commentary on the thing, you know, so it's tough. It's like...
It's kind of a have your cake and eat it too.
Can you watch, say, an Austin Powers and enjoy an Austin Powers and then not like a James Bond?
If you have a sense of humor, then no, you can't watch Austin Powers and enjoy it.
That's absolutely wrong. First two are quite good.
There's one good joke in the first one.
That's not true.
One funny joke.
Okay, what is the funny joke in Austin Powers?
The steamroller. The guy who can't get away to the steamroller. And they cut out the funny part of that, which is in the bonus part, which is the guy's wife being informed that he was killed.
Okay, I don't remember. Oh, okay, I didn't see the bonus part.
Yeah, if you watch the DVD of it. Like, I watched in the theater, and I didn't think it was that funny. I watched it again on DVD, because I thought, I'm missing something.
Right.
People love this movie, and yet I was left kind of cold
by it. Can you like Airplane, the movie, and not like Airport, the movie?
And I was watching, and I was thinking, oh, I remember this from Matt Helm.
Not answering me, folks.
I remember this from Matt.
Can't answer me.
I remember this from Matt Helm. Gee, this seems like Our Man Flint, those kind of parody films of the James Bond movies from the 60s.
Yeah.
Remember how hilarious Casino Royale was?
No.
Like, to me, taking a movie as bad as Casino Royale and saying, I'm going to take that movie and I'm going to duplicate it for the 90s.
Well, here's what Mike...
Wrong.
Here's what Mike... I liked him. Except for the third one, not so much. Mike Myers does something that was sneaky. He was the sneaky Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Sneaky Dragon, folks, telling about the sneaky Canadian. Mm-hmm. He would take things that we saw in Canada and incorporate them into his stuff on Saturday Night Live, and the Americans would not know. Like, you'd have... like, you do Sprockets, right?
Yeah.
And there's a show called Sprockets that was a real artsy, fartsy show on Canadian TV.
Yeah.
And he would do Simon in the Bathtub. Mm-hmm. And he would basically be doing the song Simon from the Land of Chalk Drawings. It's a really addictive little song. It's like, hey, you're borrowing this from... Hey, you took this from...
Yeah.
Ah, you swiped that from the... And there's nothing wrong with it. That's what you do in comedy. But, like, he was mining Canada.
Yeah.
And one thing that we have in Canada is we do watch a lot of British shows, and we do have a British
background. We did watch a lot of British shows. I don't think that's as prevalent now, but it was...
I think people watch more British things, like, in general now, because there's more access. Mm-hmm. But specifically back then, especially if you had a... I think he had a British father, or, like, he had some...
Yeah, his dad was, I think, Scottish.
Scottish, yeah. So, you know, if your father, like mine, was that, you would watch British shows, and you would... You know, and so the Austin Powers vibe, you know, really comes from that, you know, and as if you present that to Americans, it's like, oh, they haven't seen that before. They've seen James Bond, so clearly they know that structure, but maybe you've seen, you know, that kind of randy, almost the carry on kind of, you know, dirty joke, you know, kind of thing.
Leaves me cold.
Cheeky business.
I know.
Because you dislike the UK.
No, I love the UK.
Just do you?
That style of... That kind of camp humor, the repressed sexual humor of Britain doesn't do it for me.
Did you ever see the Mitchell and Webb sketch where it was the camp hospital, and then one guy just actually goes, like, into the, you know, so you guys want to just fuck?
Yes, have you? That's what you need. In,
all right.
Or for just someone to say, you know, you're gay. You're as gay as, you know, like, me, you know, and it seemed like Frankie Howard and Kenneth, I can't remember his name now, Kenneth something.
Is this Are You Being Served?
This is a Carry-On Gang.
Oh, okay. Very good.
Yeah. It had a, like, British humor from that. It just had this huge repressed homosexual element to it, that whole camp element. And then the you know, the repressed sexuality, not just homosexuality, but any sort of sexuality.
Right.
Just kind of coming out in these sort of tittering jokes. And that just left me cold.
And yet the women all wore amazing lingerie.
Yes, they did.
For very repressed people, they did a lot of shopping at whatever lingerie shop that was. Got it perfectly fitted. Really kept themselves in shape. It.
Excuse me, I just got a cough for 1 second.
Oh, please do.
You carry the show.
All right. I will carry on.
Carry on.
Carry on hacking.
Carry on up the Tiber. And
okay.
I will... You didn't carry on. That was a total pause while I coughed. I need a cough switch.
That's fine. That's all right. It's okay to cough on a podcast.
Okay.
We're not radio.
We've gone way up the... I just want to say about Austin Myers is it was no I Married an Axe Murderer.
Okay. Well, there is no such thing as Austin Myers.
Did I say Austin Myers?
Yes, you did.
The wiener.
The wiener?
Yeah. I wish I was were an Austin Meyer wiener.
Okay. That's a type of car from England?
The Austin Meyer. That's right. Austin Powers. I'm sorry. You know, the best thing produced by a Meyer is Paul Meyer's book about Todd Rundgren in the studio. That's a really good book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've read his book on the Bare Naked Ladies.
Is that good?
It's all right. Oh. It's all right. He used to co-host the movie reviews section of Urban Rush with Patrick Maliha.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. He's got very white hair.
Yes, he does.
And that's how you can tell him apart from his brother.
Is that right?
That's the only way.
There's no other way to tell them?
The only way you can tell them apart is because of their hair color, which is why legally they are mandated to both have that kind of hair.
And their bank accounts.
I don't know. Maybe Paul steals.
If he embezzles.
From his brother.
Why not?
Like, all he'd have to do is, like, put on the wig, go into the bank and go, hi, everybody. Or, I'm trying to think of the Austin Power catchphrase. And I want to go, you want to do me? That's not his catchphrase. Hey, baby, whatever his catchphrase is, and they go like, hey, look, it's Austin Myers. And then he just, they'd give him all the money that he wanted, and then he'd just go live at large.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very good.
I actually know a remarkable amount of famous people's relatives.
Okay.
If you start listing, I'm not going to because it's weird, but I do know a lot of brothers and sisters of famous people.
Okay. Since you're not going to name them, I'm going to switch gears. I was watching...
Dave, switch to Top Gear. I've just come back from England, and I enjoy that show, even though I don't like cars, but please go ahead.
Yeah, that show's pretty good. It's good and not good at the same time.
You're absolutely right. That's exactly what it is. It's good and not good.
It's better to PVR it so you can mm-hmm. fast forward through.
By the way, that's the same thing for most TV.
I was watching the classic show Emergency the other day.
Excellent. Emergency with an exclamation mark.
Emergency, yes.
Now, this isn't Emergency Plus 4, the animated spinoff.
No.
Okay.
I didn't know there was an animated spinoff.
Yes, it was called Emergency Plus 4.
And who were the plus 4?
I believe there's 4 kids. Oh. Maybe a dog.
Was there any of the original cast in
it? The great Shmazoo, who was a magical elf who would cause fires accidentally when he farted.
I hope you're joking.
I am. I don't think a lot of shows in the 70s had farting characters.
No. But that would be an excuse
for them to go. Shmazoo.
Oh, you've caused another fire. More loss of life, Shmazoo. Now I really enjoy Emergency.
Yep, it's a great show.
It could be nostalgia.
Yes, it is.
But I also think it's a good show. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know.
Some daring, by the way, anyone out there that don't know what Emergency is, I always got to, you know what I like doing? I like setting things up for people.
Oh, because, okay.
You know, there's
set it up.
We have young people in the audience,
I'll
Dave.
Have a drink.
I had a young person come up to me after the Critical Hit show, which is a D&D show I do on Thursday, and congratulate us on the 50th anniversary. It was very kind.
Oh, that's nice.
Had not listened to the 51st because he knew we were going to talk about Skyfall and didn't want any spoilers.
Oh, okay.
So he has not listened to that. Okay. But he is a young man. And I'm thinking this fellow would not know what Emergency is. So I'm going to talk directly to him.
Okay, you talk to that person.
Hello. Hello there. It's me, Ian. We talked Thursday. Nice to see you again. Thanks for coming to that show. Emergency was a program that was...
Thursday? Wednesday?
Sure. Whatever. Yeah, okay. Don't call that's me a you're... liar in front of people.
Okay.
Don't line me up. Yeah, that's right, because Thursday I was out of voice. I had
no voice.
I'm
just thinking to myself, wait a second, this was an excuse? Was this a head wound?
No, it wasn't. So, Emergency. If you were...
Dave,
if, in the 70s, there was a show, and it was an action-packed show. It combined both hospital drama and firefighting drama.
Yeah.
So you would cut back and forth between these two locations, and your through characters were Johnny Gage and Roy DeSoto.
Yep.
And they were firefighters.
Don't forget Dixie McCall.
Okay, that was at the hospital.
Yeah.
But you would follow the firefighters to the hospital. Then we would stay at the hospital usually for a bit.
Sometimes.
And then go back and forth.
Not.
Sometimes maybe, sometimes not.
They
but they had a lot of action-packed rescues, usually mm-hmm. someplace very high.
Yes.
And you could see there was no wires. And you're like, holy shit.
Climbing up a tower.
They are really, really high.
Yeah.
It's incredibly dangerous. And you go like, that's impressive. But then you also go, the sound guy also had to go up there. So there you go.
They had a platform nearby.
But please continue with your Emergency.
There was
story.
One with Johnny, with the actors who were Randolph Mantooth, the greatly named Randolph Mantooth, and Kevin Tig. I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Who was a really great later on Freaks and Geeks.
Really?
And also quite good on Lost.
Oh, I didn't watch either.
Playing
of those
assholes on both.
Really?
Yeah, but a bit
He's
more.
He's such a nice guy on. That's a nice guy.
I know. It was just great playing against type.
Yeah. They were in an ambulance, involved in a car accident. Then they had to take the guy out of the ambulance, put him onto a stretcher, put the stretcher on top of the fire engine, and take the guy to the hospital on the fire engine. He's having cardiac arrest, so they're performing, they're defibbing, mm-hmm. doing CPR.
Defibbing means stopping him from lying.
Defibrillating, you know, with the little paddles where
they... Where they yell clear.
Clear. They do that almost every show. They actually realize the audience really like the defibrillation. Let's do it all the time.
Did you ever see, by the way, the pilot where they did that for the first time?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was good.
So they're on top of the fire engine, mm-hmm. zooming down the street, and the actors are there on top of this fire engine. Nothing, there's no wires, there's no harnesses attaching them. They're just sitting, they're basically standing on top of this thing, having to lean back when they have to clear.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, really exciting. And then there was another show, because... My daughter, Millis, was saying that one of the problems with television is that women have different symptoms when they have a heart attack. But very few people know the symptoms because they never show a woman having a heart attack on television.
Well, that's really interesting.
Because they can't show the defibrillation because they can't, you know, they have to tear open their blouse and da da da.
What are the different symptoms? How is it different?
I don't know. Maybe I should have asked her. We were just talking because what interested me then after we finished talking,
by the way, look that up, everybody. That is important to know.
We were watching the show. And they had a woman have a heart attack on it. Now, this was a bit different. She was having a heart attack because she overdosed on barbiturates.
Right, as you do.
And
quite often they would have hippies that would get into a whole bunch of trouble for their bad behavior.
But what was really great is the whole room goes into action and a nurse stands in front of her, in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really see all of her.
Right.
They tear open her blouse. then they start doing all the stuff. But so they can do it, have all the action, but you can't see her breasts. So, they can still show it on television.
Right.
Which I thought was really smart. And it was really exciting because you couldn't see what was happening. So it kind of upped the ante.
Yeah.
But what I brought it up for was this weird show I was watching, 2 days ago. And it was regular emergency. It opens with them. They're in a grocery store, an LA grocery store.
Right.
A small corner store. Working on this guy who's been injured somehow. He's bleeding.
Right.
Johnny Gage, one of the paramedics, notices something or hears something and he goes to investigate. He goes into this room. He's looking around, can't see anything. Then he sees some blood that's dripping down this cupboard.
Ooh.
And he looks up and there's a tiger up on top of this.
Oh, remember shelf. That one? Yeah, yeah.
So then he goes out. They take the guy out into the street.
His eyes pop out of his
then
head.
Then it strangely cuts to two animal control officers who are taking some kitty cats out of an attic of this crabby old woman. Then they get called to go to the...
You know what this smells like?
Yeah.
Spin-off episode.
It's so weird. So then it has the it yep. has the credit scene. Yep. It has a regular opening yep. For emergency.
Uh-huh.
And then when the show starts proper, it has a different song with different credits.
Right.
Introducing... I can't remember there's a black guy.
Right.
There's a white guy. They're the two animal control agents. The white guy played by Mark Harmon, a very young Mark Harmon.
Yeah. Frank Katz, Robert Doggs.
That's right. Then Gary Crosby is the kind of overworked, harried supervisor.
Okay.
Then there's David Huddleston, who you probably don't know, but if you saw him, you'd go, oh, that character actor, I know him. He plays the vet. And then there was a woman who played the receptionist that they did the calls and stuff like that.
So it's emergency for animals.
Emergency for animals. It even has a sequence where Dr. Brackett, Dr. Early,
yeah.
and Nurse McCall have to do a heart surgery on a baby goat.
Of course they do.
So even after Dr. Brackett refuses to
And you know what? The government pays for it. Nanny state. Am I right?
Well, Brackett even says that. He goes, we have an $80 million hospital, $150,000 worth of talent here. And we can't save a goat, so...
That's right.
They do.
Because if they do accidentally sacrifice that goat, Satan rises and takes over Los Angeles.
It is a problem.
We got to save that kid. That's just a generically weird thing that they do in TV shows where all of a sudden... It'd be like you and I together here, Dave, mm-hmm. and we're doing our show. And I'd go like, oh, I broke something. Hey, have you met my friend? He's a real fix-em-up guy here.
Yeah.
And I introduce him. And he goes, but he's having a lot of trouble with his wife. And then you and I leave. And then he starts talking. And then his wife shows up. And then that's the podcast. It's him and his wife. And it's like, oh, they've done one of those spin-off bullshit things.
That'd be good. But it just seemed weird. What seemed weird? Like, I've seen spin-offs. Like, I've seen them introduce characters.
Yep.
And you know that they're going to be spun off
into
something.
They just jam them in hard. Just jam them right in there. They don't belong.
But I had never seen one that had two sets of credits sequences, one after another.
Well, it makes sense because later on they will just make that, when they put it into reruns, if the show had succeeded, they would just use that episode as, but that's something that they used to do all the time. Okay. So you'd have like an episode of Happy Days. And then, when you're showing Mork and Mindy, you then have that episode of Happy Days as like, part of the syndication package.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that episode was directed by Jack Webb.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's okay. It was kind of boring.
Well, no, Jack Webb is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. From Dragnet.
So tell your young friend that.
He was also the inventor of Spider-Man, Jack Webb.
Really? How do you mean that?
Because that's his name, Webb.
Oh.
He was also the inventor of the worldwide Web, but with two B's.
Have you ever seen the Dragnet movie, the theatrical movie?
Yep, saw that in theaters.
No, not the horrible one with Dan Aykroyd.
Well, that is the Dragnet movie.
No, there was one that was released at the theaters from the original.
Guys, the guy's yelling at me.
The original
show. He's saying the Dragnet movie. Now, when you say the Dragnet movie, you mean the Dragnet movie, right?
No, I
don't. He's not saying, had you seen any of the Dragnet movies? He didn't say that, did he? He said the, which means I was correct there. By the way, Art of Noise does the soundtrack. Pretty good. Not a great movie, but pretty good soundtrack. All right, go back to you, Dave.
Okay.
What about a Dragnet movie?
Have you seen the original Dragnet movie?
Oh, no, sir, I have not.
That stars Jack Webb and Henry Morgan, who later played Colonel Potter on MASH.
Right.
It is the darkest, gloomiest movie I have ever seen.
Oh, they don't succeed. Okay.
The guy gets away with it.
All right.
It has this long sequence with this woman whose husband has been murdered, who has a wooden leg.
Okay.
And all you can do is, and she's living in squalor in this kind of tiny apartment because he was just in. Guy, he's just a cab driver guy who got killed.
Right.
And she's got a wooden leg.
Right.
And I think a drinking problem. And the movie's so gloomy. And then they don't even succeed in getting this jerk.
You know what? I bet if she unscrews the leg, there's booze in it.
Maybe. I wouldn't blame her. Because she has a wooden leg. You know, and her husband's been murdered. And it's so, you just watch the movie and you're just like, ugh.
There's a lot of people with wooden legs that live full, rich lives. Pirates.
When people tell you that the 50s were all about
wooden legs, they're not wrong.
The 50s were all about, like, you know, a fake happiness and, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, people always talk about the 50s, like, you know, everyone had to be the atomic family and everything was all normal, blah, blah, blah. I don't think that's true.
No, well, here's the other thing about that. It's like, think about right now. By the way, I want to get back to emergency afterwards.
Okay.
think about, like, right now. And, like, we are now, like, 11 years away from 9/11, right? 11 years.
Yeah.
Now, just think about in the 50s. You were always like, just think of how short amount of time World War II was.
Yeah.
You haven't shaken that off.
No.
You haven't just walked that fucking off. Like, there's people that you know that died in that war. You're forever changed.
Yeah.
You know, you're messed up. Like, I get, you know, the idea that it's sunshine and rainbows, but that's just, hey, man, we gotta get our act. We're putting on a happy face, everybody. But, you know, there's got to be moments where then you go into the upstairs room and you lock it and you have yourself a good cry.
Mm.
You know, you unscrew your wooden leg, you have yourself a drink.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's that element to it. Yeah, I mean, here's people who, I mean, you can kind of understand. You go from the Depression.
Right.
Let's say you were a soldier in World War II.
Okay.
And those guys, there was no term of duty, right? You didn't go on, you didn't have 100 days of combat and then come home or whatever. You fought till it was finished.
That's right.
So you leave, let's say you leave Canada or you leave the United States, you leave America, and you come over to fight.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're Canadian, you fought from 39. If you're American, you fought from 41. So the Depression was
the maximum. That's the maximum. That's right. You might have started fighting in
42. I just meant in that, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So you... The Depression's still on,
mm-hmm.
you know, things are still kind of low key. Everyone's still kind of coming out of that time period.
Right.
You go over, you fight this terrible war. You experience all these terrible things that happen to you.
Yeah.
You know, death of friends, you know, murdering people, all right. the kind of things that you're.
Things you can't talk about you with almost, anybody.
Yeah. You almost dying and stuff. Yeah. I mean, I have another friend whose name is Ian, and his uncle fought in Italy. He was a flamethrower. To me, fighting a war with the canisters of gasoline in your back. This doesn't sound that great.
No, that's not like something humans should be able to do to each other. And then to be able to come back and just go and now just go to the store and buy some apples.
Be normal. And now come back to a world where it's, you know, 5 or 4 or 3 years later.
Right.
Women have changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've had their own experiences back home. They've worked. They've been independent.
Life has gone on without you.
So now you come back. Your reaction is, whoa, hold your horses. Let's take a step back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's kind of go back a little bit here.
Yeah, you've been thinking about what you want home to be when you go home. And you've gone home and it's not what...
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like it always seems wrong. When you've been away for a long time, you come back to anywhere. And I'm being a little light on this, obviously. You know, it's so extreme that there's no way I can wrap my head around it.
Yeah.
But I'm talking just on a real basic level. Say you, like, leave Canada for a year and you come back.
Yeah.
You walk around your town that you live in now.
Yeah.
It looks fucking weird. Everything looks...
Just being away for 3 weeks when we went to England coming back to
everything looks wrong. Yeah, everything looks like it's not the right size.
Yeah.
People look different. Things don't feel right.
To be honest, it looked ugly when we came back.
Sure.
Because we came back to summer, you know, so everything's all yellowed from the, because it's all sun parched, you know, and everything. And you're just kind of like, ugh, you know, like England was nice. This is gross. You know, it's just weird, right?
Yeah. Because you're... It's always, there's a disconnect, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, with things. So, like just thinking that they came back and you got that naturally, but then again, time has passed, like you say, and people really have changed and, you know, people get distant from you cause you've been away for years, you know, and you got kids that don't recognize you and just, oh my Lord. So yeah, you do want to grab onto things and even if things aren't right, you want to fake that they're right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to put on this strong persona and we're going to, by God, have a picnic in the backyard and everyone's going to have a good time. We're going to have a nice fucking Christmas, right?
Yeah.
No one's going to screw this fucking thing up, you know, or I might lose it and take the flamethrower to the house.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you know, that was a real burgeoning of like being a home handyman.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, dad doing stuff around the house, you know?
Well, you also had those guys that went over there and got trained in, like, fixing everything. I mean, that was part of it, was you got training in how to fix things. And if you didn't fix them properly, you would die.
Yeah, well, there was the engineers, the bridge builders and people
right.
like
that. Right. So when you come back, you know, you've got those skills.
Mm.
So, yeah, you're going to, what are you going to do? You're going to fix your house up.
I'm going to make a barbecue in the backyard.
Damn right you are. Damn right you are. And if anyone doesn't like it, I might just fucking bash their heads in with it. No. Again, I'm being a little over the top with that.
But yeah, because there's two kind of streams there. Like you have that, yeah, everything's good or I'm going to fucking lose it.
Right.
And then you have that, you know, then you have all those kind of that cult, that media culture that existed kind of beneath that. So you have like all the noir films that mm-hmm. came out of there, like The Big Heat with Glenn Ford, you know, as you know, where it's, you know, or like that Dragnet film where it's just so grim.
Or The Hustler. Yeah.
You know, or Journey into the, or what is it called? Journey into the Past, the one with Robert Mitchum. I can't remember now what it's called.
Anything with Robert Mitchum. Just say Robert Mitchum.
Robert Mitchum movies. Yeah, well, this, you know, all that kind of, that stream of films that came out of that time period.
Yeah, you if
know.
You're in a movie, by the way, and Robert Mitchum shows up in your movie, oh, things are going to happen.
Yeah.
Bad things are afoot if Robert Mitchum's around.
Even like actors who were in war, like Jimmy Stewart. Like if you look at what he did before World War II and mm-hmm. what he did after World War II, he was a bomber pilot. You know, or George Stevens, the director, what he did before World War II and what he did after. He was one of the first people into a concentration camp. He was a filmmaker.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so that was said that it totally changed him, like just completely. He was 180 degrees different person after he came back.
Hmm. I always wonder that when people, you know, when you have an event and the event is said to change you. Again, it feels hard to be talking about something so lightly, but like, I don't know. Ah, boy. It's weird when people say that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's rare that an event changes people completely. You know, no matter what the event is, you still remain yourself.
You still remain yourself, but I think it changes your priorities mm-hmm. or changes what you want to do.
You get perspective. But
you
it's
have a different perspective.
It is one of those weird things, though. Like, people will have things happen in their lives that are extreme. And mm-hmm. you go like, well, I'm never going to be the same again. Mm-hmm. But quite often, the pendulum then swings right back to the middle and you're back to who you are. Because it's hard to explain. The programming that you have, it's tough to vary from that. You really have to, you know, get away. Like I know people and people like myself who, you know, you have a tragedy or something occurs in your life. Like someone that you love passes away and you go, you know what? Now I know the value of life. And you know, they don't get to live every day and I do. And by God, I will, you know, follow those dreams. And you know, cause you know, life is fleeting and you're going to fucking do it, man. And here we go and let's go, and you know, then you go back into patterns.
Yeah,
you know, because the patterns are stronger than the extremes.
It's hard to escape yourself.
It is hard to escape yourself. It was one thing, like something that you told me once about, you know, after you had cancer, you're going, I'm one of the only people that like ever had cancer and then didn't change a bit. Which I don't know if that's true or not, if you still feel that is the case.
Well, I think I was probably being disingenuous at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're in the middle of post-traumatic stress syndrome, you don't really
well
recognize.
This was many years later.
Oh, okay.
That you said this to me. Yeah. And I thought I don't know if you could even tell that, because you know, who knows where your changes would have led you anyway.
Yeah,
people change regardless.
Lisa says I changed. My wife says I changed. Mm-hmm. After cancer.
In what way? Like
before you had cancer you were a dreamer, you had all these big plans, and after that you gave up.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
what do you think that would be?
Well,
It almost seems like the flip would be true. Like when, you know, when I lost a good friend of mine, I just thought of like how many things that she would not be able to do. And that I am so like all of a sudden the blessings that are on yourself mm-hmm. are so insane that you're just like, oh shit, all my limbs work. I could travel. I could save up and travel anywhere I wanted to. There's nothing stopping me from writing whatever I want or doing whatever I want for real. And, but yeah, you think like, okay, here we go, you know, and then, you know, and then you go back to the way you are. I mean, mm-hmm. you are subtly changed, obviously, and things happen, but that kind of extreme situation, I don't know. It seems to be the kind of thing people think that's what changes people, but I think most changes that happen to you happen on a more gradual basis, at least the ones that last.
Yeah.
Like I think knowing Pia, my wife, has changed me more than extreme things that have happened to me or tragedies, you know, just because I want to be a better person for knowing her. And so little by little, you try to do better things mm-hmm. or fix yourself a little bit or, you know, do this or do that. But, you know, the, oh my God, what a scare. Oh, I am never going to eat salt again now that I had this scare. And you know, then you're back to the salt lick like the next fucking day.
The salt is so good.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, because to say I didn't dream, I mean, I started and finished Rounders after cancer.
Which is your comic book.
So I did a comic. So right. You know, I took a year of hard labor
mm-hmm.
and finished this freaking comic book. But then I had kids.
Right.
That changes your life.
Right.
So what changes your life more? Cancer or kids? Well, I think kids are more.
Yeah. I mean, but there's definitely a sense of optimism to having children. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you all of a sudden now a future is there in front of you.
And it's a different future. And I mean, when my daughter, I don't want to be mean to my parents. My parents were people of the 50s.
Okay.
They have a particular philosophy to life.
This is all tying in together, by the way. Remember? We were just talking about the 50s a little while ago, huh?
They had a particular, you know, they're children of that time period, and they had a particular upbringing and a particular way of bringing their staid, depression era, you know, parents' philosophy into their lives and into your life.
Right.
You know? And so, when my first daughter was born, when Millis was born, I said to myself, I'm going to be a totally different dad than my dad was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be completely different. I'm going to be the best dad that I can be. I don't say I'm going to be a perfect dad. I'm just going to be the best dad. Like, I'm going to totally be a great dad. Mm-hmm. And so it's up to them to say whether I succeeded or not. I can't say. But that was, you know,
From an outsider's point of view, I think pretty darn good. Yeah.
I made a conscious decision to not, you know, like, I don't know if you remember when I was a teenager, I was a terribly argumentative person.
Mm-hmm.
I could debate for years about the most ridiculous
things. I think we've argued 7 times on this show so far, and we're like 44 minutes in.
When I reached about 20,
you were a contrarian.
I was a contrarian.
I think if you had a religion, I would say orthodox contrarian.
That's true. Yeah.
God is good. Really? Amen. Anon. Yeah. Good.
That's probably why I became a Christian. Just all my friends were atheists. Hmm? I'm like, fuck this. Atheist, you guys are so wrong.
And then the church went, please don't say fuck this.
The church doesn't care.
Listen, motherfuckers, I'm being a fucking Christian. That's right. Okay, step one, knock off the potty mouth.
They're all hippies. They're like, that's okay. Just go with it, man. Go where God takes you. The Spirit is speaking. when I was about 20, when I met Lisa, I resolved to not argue anymore. I said, I'm going to change myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to become a different person. Because I had just reached this point where I would just do it without even thinking.
Right.
You know, and I was bored of myself. I'd be like arguing, be thinking to myself, this is so boring. What am I doing? Like, I can't believe how tiresome I've become. Like, I could recognize it. I'm sure my friends felt that way, but you just don't want to say anything because they're your friends. So they don't want to be a jerk. So they're like, well, hopefully Dave will change or maybe he'll stop arguing. So yeah, I just made this conscious decision. So I don't know if that can work all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know, like be to self-affirm or whatever.
I think you can to a certain degree. There's things that I do. Like I used to, all right, well, this is a big thing, but I used to be self-abusive. I used to hit myself very hard when I was like, because I was abused as a kid. And basically the way things would go would be, things would be very, very tense. Mm-hmm. And then there'd be some sort of abuse would occur and that would be the end of it. And that would be the punctuation mark. And that would be the end. And then, you know, dad or, you know, whatever situation would happen would leave and there was silence and we would not talk about it. And there you go. But it would be over, you know? So when I was going through depression and it would get so bad, it was just like, there's no end to it.
Yeah.
Like I remember someone that I was in love with used to have panic attacks and I would envy them because I went like, well, when a panic attack is over, it's over. Mm-hmm. But I was just depressed and it would just be continuous. It would not end. It would just be, you'd wake up the next day the same as you wake up there. So when things got so frustrating, I would just like punch myself in the face really hard or just like crush my hand or do something like that.
Yeah.
And when I started going out with Pia, she saw me do that once and there was just this awareness of it. I just went, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm just not going to do that anymore. And I just made a conscious choice to stop that. But then I had to over time also stop the mental process that led to that as well.
Yeah.
You know, basically being kind to yourself and through therapy that also, you know, help me with that. But it's definitely the instinct is like when things get bad, things have to get to a peak and then go on. But the one thing I never did was I never threw violence towards anyone else.
Yeah.
That was my choice was like my dad would throw violence towards other people.
Yeah.
I never saw him hurt my mother.
Yeah.
But that was how he had his release. And I just went, nope, I'm not fucking doing that. If I'm going to hurt anyone, I'm going to hurt myself.
Yeah.
And then over time stopped doing that as well.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not a person who's opposed to spanking kids, but I never really did it. But
I think what's my thing with spanking was I got no problem with spanking as long as it's done. But boy, howdy, you've got to have control fucking factors and you can't be angry.
Yeah.
You can't be spanking through anger. It's got to be I don't know. So much of the fucking right reason.
I don't know if it's... I think you should be a little angry when you spank. Because I think it actually sounds worse if it's just cold, calculated spanking. Like, I'm angry right now, but in 2 hours won't be angry, so then I'm going to spank you. Then that sounds weird, right? Like, that sounds kind of like...
No, I don't think so. I think because...
Because then you shouldn't even be spanking if that's where you are.
Well, listen, here's the thing. It's like anything else in life, would a teacher be okay with hitting a child if they're angry?
No, would a police officer... That's not what I mean, though, but...
But what's the lesson? Because everything that you do with a child is, one, it's to keep them safe, and also to teach them a behavior. Yeah. So when you hit a child and you're angry,
are you
teaching them? I
shouldn't say when you're no, I don't mean when you're in a white rage,
right?
I just mean that you're annoyed or whatever you're reacting to. I think that has to be at that moment. You can't put off the punishment if you're going to spank.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't really think spanking is all that great. I don't think it's terrible. Both girls got spanked one time, basically.
Right.
And that was both separate occasions, but same instance, which is where we're at a grocery store and they decided the best way to get what they wanted was to lay down on the ground and cry.
Mm-hmm.
So they got lifted up and back on the bum and put into the cart, and that was the end of it.
Right.
And they didn't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like, okay, that was effective. I don't know if it would have been as effective just to put them into the cart and, you know, and just let them cry it out or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But at that moment, I just felt like, this is what you need. This is what you're going to get. And
no, I don't disagree that there's I think some parents have been able to use spanking and it's been okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't do that kind of blanket situation. I just think, like,
but that's just a smack, right? Like, I don't like the idea of like my mom got a paint stick.
Mm.
And we got, you know, several smacks for whatever we had done.
Right.
You know, and I just don't like that kind of organized, you know.
What's the difference? What's the difference between, like, bare hand and is it just level of pain that you would say is different?
I just say, like, to me, one seems so calculated.
And one seems impulsive.
And one's kind of impulsive, which isn't good. I mean, you shouldn't just let yourself go and it becomes a wild attack. But a simple smack on the bum, I don't think is too over the top.
Okay.
Particularly when they're wearing diapers and they're, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, so no. Right? I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the argument, of course, is kids learn that someone bigger than you can stop you from doing something with violence. And that's definitely what I learned, was I would then use violence on my sister. Or my sisters over time. And same thing with, you know, my sister used violence on my other sister as well. And that's what we learned from our dad. Like, it's way more monkey see, monkey do than monkey do and then figure out logically, oh, I see, this is only in that situation. And then it's also weird in that if this is the way to do it, why is it then immediately stopped after the parent level? Why shouldn't teachers, which they used to be able to, and then why shouldn't police officers? You know, and then it goes on way down the line. And just like...
I suppose. I mean, I think you can make that kind of argument against spanking. But I think a reasonable... I think used as a reasonable way.
And again, I'm coming at this from a kid. As a kid who was abused.
Yeah, that's the
like,
thing.
Like, there was times where I went to the hospital. Like, there was two major times that I went to the hospital with, like, pains. One, I decided to do a Wile E. Coyote jump off a couch and landed smack on my back and messed up my head. Because, you know, you're five and dumb. And so we go to the hospital.
And your parents didn't have shag carpeting.
Not in the basement, they didn't. But we went to the hospital, and the nurse asked some questions that I now realize were basically, are you being abused situations.
Okay.
And I answered positively because I was, you know, but it wasn't related to this.
Yeah.
So there was taken aside and questioning, and it's not something we've ever really discussed, but I think there was, you know, later on my folks would say, like, and they thought we were, like, you know, abusing you and, you know, not wanting to cause trouble. I didn't go, you were. You just weren't then. You know, it was like the one fucking time that you weren't shoplifting and they thought you were, and you were da 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 da.
Yeah.
And the same thing happened, like, with my sister when she broke her arm. Was, you know, I think she got the same series of questions, and and yeah, there was a couple of red flags, but it was the 70s and still not a lot would be done. And I don't even know what would have been done or what, you know. It's a really weird thing for me because I was adopted, and there's, you know, and I'm very happy with the life that I have now. But there is a bit of me that goes, you shouldn't have adopted me to my father. And there's no way that you could have known this. But but there should have been, it's like, shit, there's something in place there where there should have been a safeguard.
Wow.
Yeah, it's weird. And again, I love the life I have, and I love my mom, and I do love my dad. Like, that's the weird thing about this kind of situation. It doesn't mean an automatic dismissal.
Yeah.
You know, I as time has gone on, I have more sympathy for him than anything. I can see the sadness that was in him,
yeah,
and, you know, see him in a full rounded way. But yeah, you shouldn't put a kid through that.
Well, they were products of the same thing that my parents were products of, which is you'd repress your feelings.
Right.
You didn't discuss, you didn't show feelings. I mean, my dad hugged me twice,
right,
in my life. Once when I was being totally berated by my mom for my poor marks in school and I was crying. So my dad gave me a hug because he felt my mom was being unfair. And the other time was when we found out I had cancer and he was very upset and he hugged me.
Yeah.
Other than that, we talk in a very distant way to each other.
You know? Same here. We would sometimes talk through jokes.
Yeah.
And when we finally got email, then it was easy. Mm-hmm. Then things worked out a lot better. One of the weirdest times.
That's so sad, though.
It is.
That you need to have it written down.
Yeah.
And sent electronically.
But that was how.
But that's a generation.
You communicate with people, mm-hmm, the way you communicate with people.
Yeah.
You know, if I had to fucking sing to them, I'd fucking sing to them.
Yeah.
But like, there was one time that was weird in that you know, he yelled at me and said, "Yeah, it's something stupid. You're da da," and then he called me into the living room and said, "I just want to apologize to you. I called you stupid. I shouldn't have said that. Okay, bye." And I was like, "Oh, that's weird. Okay." And so I left and I just went, "Okay, well, the stupid," and like at the time going like, "Well, yeah, you shouldn't have called me stupid, but you shouldn't do the other shit either." You know, now that we're laying out these cards, maybe we could like, "Nah, that's not what's going to happen."
I never went through that. So I can't,
it's nice though that you made a conscious decision to try to be a good father.
Well, it's interesting when you said that how you stopped abusing yourself, because then it made me think that in both instances where I changed, mm-hmm, there were major changes in my life. Like I met my girlfriend to become wife.
Right.
So that was a major change in my life. So to change myself in that moment, it's not that hard to do, right? Because your life is changing. So you, mm-hmm, can make changes. Same with when my daughter came. I could make that kind of affirmation about what I wanted to be because my life was just about to change in a major, right, way, you know? So,
but I think a lot of people make those affirmations and don't necessarily follow through on those affirmations.
Maybe.
I think there's a lot of people that at the hospital go, "You know what? I'm going to be patient with you and read to you every night, and we're never going to raise a bad word, and you're going to have a great." And then, you know, the weekend, shut up with the crying. Ugh, you know, well, enough of this.
We will all fail as parents in some way.
Oh, you should.
Unfortunately, we will.
You'd raise a creepy child if you did not.
But, yes.
I'm going to say, like, I've never
Can
seen...
Can I just add one last thing?
I'm going to say one thing quick before you do that. I'm going to jam this in.
Okay.
And say that I have never, ever seen you with your daughters and felt that you didn't want to be with your daughters. And that's a huge thing to me. Because I remember, like, as a kid, seeing parents with their kids, and their kids seemed like a pain in the ass to them.
Yeah.
And they'd rather just be hanging out with the adults, yeah, and the kids are like, hey, mom. It's just like, what? You know, but I have never seen you with your daughters where you weren't happy to be with your daughters, and that's huge. Continue, sir.
Okay. Now, I forgot what I was going to say.
Okay.
No. Yeah, I can't remember. Sorry.
But I think that's enormous. I think that's enormous for self-worth and for feeling, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people have said that about us, too, that we do a lot with our daughters.
Yeah, a lot of people talk about you.
No, I just mean
talk about it. There's a website about you guys.
It's true. TheDedricks.com.
That's right. Mostly racial humor. Weird.
I just wanted to say, well,
they make you Irish.
It got taken over by the 4chan people, and it just descended. I was just going to say that
a lot of ads for gay cruises on the site too. I don't know what that's about.
gay luxury cruises.
That's right.
Yeah, it's a side company I have.
Oh, it's only the classiest glory holes. They're padded.
I know
gay cruises aren't just about that, but they also are about that. Okay, please continue.
Well, I think any cruise that would have a sexual dimension to it would be about that.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
Okay. I was just going to say about my daughters. Just about spanking is that both my daughters look back at that story because they don't remember it.
Yeah.
They find it amusing. They find it amusing that they attempted to emotionally blackmail me in a store,
mm-hmm,
got in trouble, and that was the end of it. They think that's kind of neat, I guess. I don't know how they approach it.
One of my favorite things, and we sometimes talk about it, is when my nephew, I got to make up a name for him, Dennis. Let's go with that. That kid's a menace, I'll tell you. I mean, the British style.
Oh.
British style, so Dennis good. The Menace. He's rough and tumble.
Yeah.
But there was a time when he was like a little kid, and he comes up to me, and he just starts doing the whiny voice. He's just like, "Uncle Leah. I just want to go to the...
Yeah.
And I just turned to him and like, first of all, the parents are there and they're about to start the yelling.
Yeah.
Like a little bit, hey, stop it. Stop it. Knock that off. And I just, and I turned to him and go, what's with that voice? That's a weird voice. Did you mean to do that voice? What's that about? You sound like this. Sound like a door opening. What's that about? And then he just started laughing and I just called him on his, on the silliness and he's never pulled that with me again.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you just like, hey, knock it off.
I know what you're doing.
Yeah, you look like an idiot. This is ridiculous. It's like, all right.
I see what you did there.
Yep.
All right. Well, we're getting close to the end of the show.
Okay, then I got to say this one thing about Emergency.
That's what I was going to say. I know you wanted to talk about Emergency before.
Okay. It's a weird thing when you see pilots, mm-hmm. and then they have things in pilots that then they ditch later on. They're like, oh, we shouldn't have had that for the pilot.
Yeah.
We'll just forget that ever happened. Yeah. Things like in Happy Days where he's got a spare brother, and then the brother goes up the stairs and like dies.
His room.
In Vietnam.
Yeah.
So they had the pilot for and what they did was they did what they sometimes do on shows, which is they take the pilot and then they'll have a flashback episode and just like, hey Johnny, how about this chili? Yeah, it's delicious. That's as delicious as the chili we had back in the station when you first started.
Yeah.
Oh, remember that? Let's remember a different film stock. Sharp contrast change, different haircut. Everyone looks a little weird, talking with a slightly different accent.
Yeah.
Not really the past.
Yeah.
So they were showing the first Emergency. And Johnny Gage in that one becomes the first paramedic ever.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he's, you know, he can't give an injection at first, even though he's been trained. And it's like, you can't give an injection. You can't use the defibrillator. You can't do the da da da. And then like, I'm doing it anyway. And then he's like, oh, big fuck up. And then like later he actually does it the right way and learns from it. But yeah, because he succeeds, the whole program begins.
Yeah.
And then there's paramedics all around America.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's always weird to me, like in the later episodes where people are talking about, you know, paramedics and it's like, no one mentions you were the first one. That seems the kind of thing that would get brought up, you know, that, hey, you are the reason for this whole thing that's going on that everyone has, that you're at the convention of the, all these guys, you were Mr. Firsty.
They're just doing their job.
And they also dumb them up over time.
They do and they don't.
He's very smart at his job. He's
very good at his job.
But then he's confused by an Adam 12 episode that he watched. And he's just like, how do you think we got out of that, bruh? I don't know. I'm going to talk about this the whole episode.
That's kind of... That's sort of an appealing part of his character, though.
Mm-hmm.
But it is funny. Like, I remember watching it. Like, I watched it as a kid. Like, I had to go to Cub Scouts on Saturday evenings.
I'm sorry.
So I would be... like anxious that I was going to miss Emergency.
Great.
Better get home because Emergency's going to be on, you know. Where's mom? She's not picking us up yet. We got to get home because Emergency's going to be on. And then, and I really admired Johnny Gage.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was my hero.
Mm-hmm.
And I watch it now and I'm like, he's kind of a goof.
Yep.
It's kind of weird. Why would I, what was I, but he's really good at his job though. Like,
yeah, he's really good at his job. Good natured guy. He's dating a lot of girls.
Yeah.
And occasionally he'll bring up the Native American aspect of his personality, mm-hmm. and like mm-hmm. he'll get offended by something and like do something like, oh, that's it's just nice, smooth integration of that into this. It's not, you know, all of a sudden a special episode where we learn. No, someone will say some shit. He'll say some shit back. That's the end of the shit that's been said.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to go rescue a guy on a roof or find a sexy lady who's got her toe in the bathtub. Remember that one?
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
That was really good.
That was really good. I tell you. There was a lot of bubbles in the 70s that would cover things quite well.
There's one at a strip club.
Oh,
a woman passes out. And then one at a belly dancing.
Yeah, there was occasionally your sexy episodes.
Yep, had your sexy episode. And then Chet wasn't allowed in to the strip club, and he was all huffing and puffing.
Why wasn't he allowed in? Because, like, a restraining order?
No, you don't need to come in, Chet. You just wait outside. He's like, what? Why can't I? Oh.
Was Chet the prankster?
He was, the guy with the mustache.
Yeah, I liked him.
He was a good character.
And then a couple of the other guys were actual firefighters.
Yeah?
Yeah, they were. They were actual firefighters.
Interesting.
They both supervised the stunts that went on,
yeah.
and then they could also do the stuff accurately.
They could do it, like take the hoses off the truck.
Take the hose, or they could climb up somewhere if it was like a big rescue kind of situation. Yeah, no, it's really good.
But not just that, but I mean, Randolph Mantooth and Kevin Tighe, they also like climb up high.
Oh, hell yeah.
I just couldn't believe
it. They did amazing things.
Yeah.
Where this is all just an ad for Emergency.
It's on MeTV.
Dave and I were talking and we're just going, how do we want to celebrate our first anniversary? And we said the first anniversary, I think, is paper. And that paper is a TV guide cover with emergency on it.
Woo!
Yeah. All right. So we all like emergency is what we're saying.
Well, it's like, I think if a modern person watched that show, mm-hmm. they would criticize it as being too up. You know what I mean? Like everything's too up on the show.
Everyone's too positive?
Everything's too positive.
They had some people die.
They had some dark stuff on
the
show.
They'd kill a kid.
Though.
They would kill a kid like that to teach you a lesson. A kid would drink some paint, fucking die. Yeah. Done. You're dead. Dead kid. Shouldn't have let the kid drink paint. Yeah. He's a dead kid now. Good job. And then the mom's, oh.
There's one where a boy tries to commit suicide because his mom is abusing him.
Yep.
Played by Mariette Hartley.
Oh, nice one. Good for her.
Yeah, there's some dark stuff. There was one the other day where a heroin addict gets injected by milk.
Harvey Milk?
No. Someone injects her with milk into her leg because there was some sort of root, like superstitious idea that would help you get out of an OD.
Oh my God. Okay.
But really what it does is it creates poison. And so she develops this giant abscess in her leg and now she's going to have a fist sized hole in her leg.
Yep.
And I mean, it's just a tossed up thing. It's like 3 minutes of the show, but it's still sticking in my head.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. They would do that. They would have you would always have your big high rescue. You would have your medical situation. Mm-hmm. And then you'd usually have one little, are you crazy? Don't blankety blank with blank.
Yeah.
You'll blank.
Yeah.
And then they'll teach a lesson. And then Dixie would flirt with the main doctor. And you really got the feeling that they occasionally had a lot of casual sex.
That's like, fine.
Yeah.
But you know what's funny is that she was married to Dr. Early.
Is that right?
In real life, yeah. Bobby Troup and Julie London were an item. Dr. Early wrote Route 66.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah. Bobby Troup was a singer and songwriter.
Good for people doing things.
Yes.
Well, I know like on shows, I'm forgetting it, but it was some sort of firefighter show,
Chicago Hope?
No, it was Chicago Hope. It was something there was a reason. Here's the thing.
Rescue Me?
I want to say the name of the show, and it's not this, obviously, because this would make no sense.
Okay,
it's not called Catch and Release. It's in no way called that, because that would be a fishing show. But I think it's
Catch a Fire.
It's like something and something, and they tried to combine, once again, police and fire.
Simon and Simon.
And they had Randolph Mantooth.
Simon and Schuster.
Guest star.
Oh, really?
Yes. And they came on, and they made like other little jokes about, you know, they named like the dog after, I think, Johnny Gage or something like that.
Okay.
You know, or something, maybe they talk about emergency. But yeah, it was like a real nice tribute show to emergency.
Mm.
But frankly, TV, and I know TV people listen to this show, just remake emergency.
No, don't remake it.
All right. Dave says don't.
Because you'll ruin it.
By the way, remember when Dave said he wasn't argumentative anymore? Once again.
Well, I'm not a complete milquetoast. I just, you know.
Oh, don't put milquetoast in your leg.
No, don't inject milquetoast.
Don't do that.
No, not at all.
That doesn't get toast out of your leg.
Wet bread is gross.
Oh, agreed. Agreed.
Every Monday after roast beef on Sunday, mm-hmm. we would have the same dinner, which was a piece of bread
mm-hmm.
with sliced roast beef on it, covered with gravy.
Fuck that.
Gross.
Fuck that. Fuck that.
Soggy bread.
Fuck that. You know what? I thought I had an abusive childhood. I was wrong. Someone did that to me once when I was a kid. They did the old wet turkey sandwich. It was like, oh, a turkey sandwich. That sounds delicious. How about some gravy? Oh, yeah. Bloop. What the fuck are you thinking? That's the most horrible thing I've ever seen. Yes. There's a reason we have bread, and it isn't to soak the gravy completely soak through.
Yes.
It's okay if, like you got a piece of bread, and you dab the gravy, and then you sop it up. That's you controlling it. Now you've put the gravy into another – oh, it's just making me upset just even thinking about this.
Thank God we ended our anniversary show talking about gravy-soaked bread.
You know what, Dave? We started off with a discussion about buns, and we ended with an anti-gravy rant.
About bread.
And you know what we did in between about bread?
Yeah.
And we sandwiched that with childhood anecdotes.
About abuse.
About abuse. You know what we've done for you folks? We made you a nice little abuse sandwich. You're welcome. And you know what? We're soaking it in the gravy of love. You know where you can get that? On a gay cruise. But don't order that sandwich.
That's right. And portholes are different than glory holes. That's something you should always remember on mm-hmm. gay cruises.
That's right. The portholes are to the right. The glory holes are to the left.
That's right. Portholes actually are to the left.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, you've worked on a fishing boat, so you should know.
So I know the difference between port and starboard. Port has four letters, and so does left.
That's right.
Starboard,
And I'm not saying what happened on that boat, but let's just say Dave earned enough money to get a house.
That's right.
And you don't earn that much money fishing.
No.
That's Dave's abusive story that we will tell you next week. That'll be rolled out over the next year yeah. of our show. Over the next year of our show.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to start wrapping this up. Thank you, by the way, to everyone who has been came up and like said nice things recently about our show. There have been a couple of people who have been very nice. I will pass those compliments on to you afterwards, Dave.
Thank you.
If you're in Vancouver this Monday, I'm doing my show called Sideswipe.
Oh, yeah.
At the Havana restaurant at 8 o'clock.
Okay.
It's only $5. You know what? If you come down, you say Sneaky Dragon, we'll let you in free. How about that? There. Boom. There. That's just for you. That's a first anniversary present for you.
That's the promo code.
That's the promo code. It's just come on down, Sneaky Dragon, boom. We are on Stitcher Smart Radio right now. Why not listen to this episode again on Stitcher? I know you downloaded it. Why not listen to it again on Stitcher?
Yeah.
And why not link it to Facebook and go like, hey, look, I'm listening to this on Facebook like I do because I don't know how to turn that fucking thing off.
Your friends. But it's good promotion.
Oh, it's really good promotion.
That you're listening to
Absolutely
our show.
Absolutely.
And they'll be like, oh, you're listening to a show called Sneaky Dragon. I think I listen to it. What the fuck, buns?
There
click, turn off.
If you like comic books, both the Simpsons and Futurama comic books this month are written by me. One has a picture of Robot Santa on the cover. One has a picture of Spider Pig knocking Homer over on a ladder on the cover. The one with Spider Pig has nothing to do with the contents inside. The actual stories inside are all Oscar Wilde related. They really are. I've done like
strange tease.
Three Oscar Wilde stories. I did the Portrait of Dorian Gray, Selfish Giant, and Remarkable Rocket.
Wow.
Simpsons style.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what's going on. Anything you want to mention that you're excited about in the next little while?
Well, I was able to take some time and post all 51 of the title cards onto the so if you go to the website and look under art, you can find Pia's posters for Titmouse and there, and also my title cards for Sneaky Dragon.
Nice, and they look really quite nice.
Yes, I was very happy with the last one.
Oh, the Skyfall one.
Disgustingly happy.
That made people not listen because they went, oh, you must be talking about Skyfall. I'm not going to listen to that one because I got to go see Skyfall. That cost us listeners, man.
Still, it's such a good title card.
It was a really good title card.
And then I am still working on my After 50 post, which is another long process post about doing title cards.
Oh, cool.
So I have my favorite title cards, my least favorite title cards, and then some process pictures of them as I develop the drawings.
I may do a process thing about how I do my comic strips, and you'll just see me swearing in front of a
That's the next thing I have to
pad.
Do is put yours up onto the website.
Oh, okay.
Well.
All right. That's
fine. We'll have another category under art.
Good. All right. So we, I think, are well wrapped. You know everything that's going on in our lives. You've known a lot about our lives personally now. You might be hungry for bread. We've talked a lot about
you
bread.
You might be hungry for bread.
But if go ahead.
No. Well, no, forget it.
No, of course we're not going to end on no, forget it. Go, just say it.
I was just going to say on December 16th, if you live in Aldergrove or near Aldergrove, the church choir I sing with is putting on a Christmas concert.
Nice.
On Sunday the 16th at 2 p.m. by donation. It's about a half hour, 40 minute long concert called, I can't remember what it's called, Sing to the World, Sing to the World with Joy or something.
Okay.
I can't remember what it's called.
All right, but it's joyful singing.
It's joyful singing. It's Christmas carols, but it's like a medley of them,
right?
With a narration, and then they're all kind of jazzed up. And
death metal, a lot of death metal and hardcore rap.
Lots of fun harmonies. Yes.
Okay, that's good.
Yes, we'll be doing them as various bands. Venom,
Slayer,
yeah.
And on now that you're mentioning that, sorry, folks, I'm really trying to get you home on time. December 12th, Dave and I will be at the Rio Theater. As part of a screening of The Goon, the movie
Goon.
The Goon, Jay Baruchel's The Goon.
Yes.
And it's to raise money for the Canucks Children's Hospice. And before the show, there's some shenanigans and some stand-up comedy and some fun and some trivia and some business. And Dave and I will be up there as part of the trivia section answering questions about pop culture and hockey. And by that, I mean Dave will be answering the hockey questions because I know nothing about hockey at all.
I will be deferring to Ian throughout that as well.
Well, not about hockey, though, because then the children will not get any money.
I am very polite.
No, don't.
Oh.
No, answer all the damn hockey questions.
Okay, sorry.
Okay.
I misunderstood.
By the way, if you want to ask Dave some hockey trivia questions in the meantime, warm him up. That's not a bad thing to do. Or just write us a line. We'd like to hear from you. That is all for us. This has been our first anniversary. We're going to do this for at least another year. That's what I say. Knock on wood. Thanks for sticking around this whole year. If you've done it, if you're a new listener, bless you. Nice to hear from you. And this is a treat, my friend. Anything to say to the good people before we go?
Goodbye.
Yeah, that's what he always fucking says. Argumentative son of a bitch. Bye, everybody.